Well, the old proverbial, better late than never, I guess. Well, we're very late, and that's my fault. And hello, and welcome to Trending Now. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Propaska, and of course, the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell. And today's program is going to be a little bit different, as we will be, again, sorry for being so late. Let me just turn off the music here while Josh gets adjusted. What do you have lined up, Josh?
I have Melissa Cox, the Ward 2 counselor in Gloucester, who is running for counselor at large in Gloucester this time around. And I have Jeff Cohen, who's a candidate for city council at large in Salem.
Okay, we're also going to be talking with Tim Kearns, I hope, because I gave him the wrong time. Tim is our not only a sports analyst, but also our political analyst and historian. And we're going to talk about the unbelievable week that has happened nationally in the United States this week with the President of the United States, of all people. We're going to talk about that. And we'll also talk with the Assistant Health Director in Gloucester about solar viewing and warnings about how to watch the eclipse on Monday. So you'll want to watch that. And we'll also be, after the program, we're going to link to the Astronomical Society of America with tips on how to safely watch the eclipse. So we'll be right back on Trending Now.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're back, and I gave everybody the wrong time today. Coach, we go on at 10 o'clock, not 11, so I apologize for that. Tim Kearns is on the line. How you doing, Coach?
I'm well, Rick.
Okay, well, let's just cut right to the chase. This is the strangest week I've ever seen with announcements coming from the President of the United States. And you as a history teacher and as a political observer, I'm sure you've got some notes on this. And how do we put this in context, Coach, because it's just absolutely incredible that the President of the United States would overtly give aid and comfort, if you will, verbally, to Nazis and white supremacists.
Rick, it's been such a tumultuous week since the events in Charlottesville took place, and the total absence of leadership from the White House. And, you know, as I was thinking about it this morning, I was waiting for you to call. The abject lack of leadership on the part of the Republican leadership in the House and the Senate as well, for not more forcefully standing up to this man who sits in the White House at this time and not demanding a retraction, not demanding more responsible leadership. How McConnell and Ryan cannot come out as the leaders of their respective houses and not condemn the president's actions and what he has said over the past week in basically, again, as many have said, giving validation to white supremacists, neo-Nazis, the KKK, you know, by equating them with fine people, you know, and blaming the protesters who are protesting against that kind of hatred in the United States that we, you know, to some degree thought that we will pass, but this just shows how far this country still has to go, where, you know, these groups can openly march, openly spill their hate, vigorously attack the American people. And I was amazed at how quickly the president could tweet out a response to the attack in Spain yesterday, and yet take so long to respond to the American terrorism, as one writer put it, that took place in our own backyard in Virginia last weekend. How it could take him 2 days,
well,
and then to come out more forcefully, as if he had, you know, barbed wire around his ankles, and they were squeezing it when he made that more appropriate response. And then the next day he comes out and just totally, you know, trashes that response. And that is the depiction of the true man himself. That is who Donald Trump is. That is who the Electoral College put into the presidency. And there have been different kind of polls talking about whether he's going to make it or not. I said the night he got elected, he won't make the first year. He'll do something. He'll find a way to get himself impeached so that he can brag about that for the rest of his life, too.
Tim, somebody posted, a friend of mine posted on Facebook, a picture of the Marine Memorial in Washington, D.C., and it was kind of a snide remark saying, so the liberals want to tear this down, too? And I never respond to that kind of stuff, but I did this time saying that's an insult to the memory of my father and to every single American who fought in World War II. And to equate the that with what went on with Trump is astounding to me. We've had years, and correct me if I'm wrong historically here, but years and years and years of combating, once we finally get into the fray, of combating Nazis and combating racism and so on. Has any other president that you know of, or any government official besides the governor of Maine and the former governor of Alabama, George Wallace, come out in support of Nazis?
No, not to my historical knowledge. Certainly there have been presidents that have been bigoted, who have been anti-Semite, but their actions and words, you know, paled in comparison to what Trump has done. You know, you get Jackson, who had certainly had his faults, but none have been as reprehensible as what Trump has done this past week. You know, one member of the neo-Nazi white supremacist group was asked, you know, well, a person was killed, and he comes right out and he says, well, you know, more will have to die. And he's talking about killing Americans, and the police were after him, you know, and right after he made that comment. And it just goes to show these are not nice people. Maybe Donald Trump thinks they're nice people, but they're not nice people. They plan violence against Americans.
What recourse?
The thing that fries me is that, you know, and we've never thought about it openly. I think some people have, as maybe they traveled the country down through the South and Midwestern states that were part of the Confederacy, and they see these statues to these Confederate war heroes. These men were traitors. You know, they were trying to lead a secession against the U.S. government. All of the leadership, you know, got off easy because they wanted a quick resolution to the reuniting of the country. So Lee, who should have been punished and the Congress had and the president demanded that he be punished, was not punished because Grant wanted to be more magnanimous. They said, okay, go home, you know, take your rifles, you know, leave your rifles, take your horses, take your mules, and go back home. And that was it. You know, unfortunately, a lot of anger spilled over from the Reconstruction that would follow, the radical Reconstruction that would follow, oddly enough, initiated by Republicans, of the time period. But these statues honor men who led a rebellion against the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen,
who have been hanged as traitors.
How do we get past that? I mean, here we have. On this program or on my Connections program on Thursdays, I'm going to have a segment called Left, Right, Center. Not the game, but actually trying to get people from the left, from the right, into the middle. But this is so incredibly divisive. And I lived in the South. My dad was in the Army after being in the Marine Corps in World War II. We lived in Texas, Georgia, and North Carolina. And the very first things that I was asked when I moved down South as a first grader and then as a third grader from Georgia to North Carolina, respectively, the kids there asked me, well, what side of the war did your granddaddy fight on? And I had no idea what they were talking about because my grandfather fought in World War I, and my father fought in World War II. So I didn't understand the question and was living on. But now, you know, how do we overcome this? And then how do you overcome the fake news You know, it's funny that, to me, the president uses the term fake news, and he's the one who initiates the fake news. I mean, he lies about General Pershing. He lies day to day, and yet no one takes it. Well, I guess the so-called liberal media takes him to task. But when will everybody else begin to research real news and find out that this guy is just, you know, he's a carnival barker?
Well, you know, I was thinking about, you know, all the lies that he, you know, perpetrates on a daily basis, because he has no sense of American history. He has no sense of world history. He has no sense of American culture other than the wealth that he has created, okay? And the fake wealth that he has created, the image that he's created for himself over all this time. And he goes to prove the point that if you speak loud enough and say it often enough, you'll find enough people to believe that you're actually telling the truth. But where is Representative Joe Wilson, who during President Obama's Obama's speech, and I believe it may have been his State of the Union address, yelled out from the audience, and you lie. Mm-hmm. Where are those Republicans standing up and going to the president, you lie? Say it straight out. You know, they had the great guns to sue it to Barack Obama, who they opposed because he was Democrat, because he was black. And yet they won't do this to the man who represents the greatest danger to the security of not only the United States, but the rest of the world in modern history. That's the problem, is that the gutless people sitting in Washington of his own quote-unquote party won't challenge him, won't step up, you know.
Well, you know what, Tim, I think maybe, and we got to go here in a minute, but I think maybe the so-called Republican agenda. By the way, I've seen Democrats say, yeah, we'd like to work with Republicans on fixing Obamacare, because they don't say it. They're not saying it's the best thing in the world either. But until there's some kind of what you're calling for, there's some kind of leadership coming out of the Republican Party that can begin to mend things. And I'm not sure it's possible to mend the extreme left, the extreme right, get them in the middle with this present administration. I don't see how that's possible.
Well, that's one of the weaknesses of our present situation, Rick, is the middle, which constitutes the largest block of voters in this country, are sitting back and allowing the edges, the right and the left, to dictate what's going on. And until the middle takes control, if we have a cat, then we're always going to have to deal with these far extremists that want to butt heads, get nothing done. In 6 months, what has Congress done that is totally Republican, with a Republican court, with a Republican president? They have gotten zero done, because they won't come to the middle. They won't talk with Democrats, because that's anathema to them. They will not work. It's not, you know, and it goes back more than to the Democrats with Bush, but they found a way to get things done. Mitch McConnell, you go back to President Obama, got elected, and McConnell's first words, among his first words, were, my job is to see that he's a one-term president, to do everything to undermine the executive.
Okay, so listen.
Just keep it in stasis till maybe we can take over.
All right.
And what have we seen since then? Nothing.
Answer this, Tim. You know, you're a former educator. I'm a former educator. We have kids who are just, their faces are absolutely glued to their devices. They're pretty much implanted in their noses. How do we, as a country, how do we begin to fix this? Because I'm going back to the 60s now, and I remember there were two things in the 60s that stand out in my education. And one was the inevitability of nuclear war. It was coming, and it was coming in 1962 and 63, and we averted it somehow. And then the civil rights movement, there was going to be a civil war that was coming, and somehow we barely averted that. But here we are, history is repeating itself, 50 years later.
Well, luckily at those times we had leadership that stood out. We don't have leadership right now that is standing out, that's not outstanding that's willing to work together. You know, and until they decide to do that, this is where we're at. And how do we tell our kids? You know, I taught history, I taught government, and you have to continue to accentuate the positive aspects of the American government, and that in times of crisis we have come together and we have moved past the crisis.
Yeah.
We resolved the issues.
Well,
and the problem with this generation, Rick, is for a lot of them is they're into their phones. They got the earplugs in the ear and they've tuned out everything around them. So they're not developing an awareness. Remember back in the 60s when we were growing up, okay, we were aware because it was there in front of us and it was talked about. And there were protests and there were sides taken. I don't see that. The kids today, a lot of them, they're just tuned out. They're totally tuned out from what is going on around them. They are so into them and not the us.
Yeah. Well, selfies.
That's what has to be created, an awareness among the youth. And there is a sizable group of young people that are aware, and they're amongst those people. They were in Charlottesville protesting, you know. But there's so many youth who are getting disengaged. For those that are aware, they discuss it. They want nothing to do with it. And the only way to really deal with it is to become engaged, to stay engaged, to make statements, to confront. Don't back away. Confront.
All right. Let's work on it, Tim, and let's see if we can, I don't know, at least in our own small way, help to maybe offer some solutions somehow. But in the meantime, take notes for me, will you?
I will do that, Rick.
All right, Tim. Thank you so much.
All right, Rick.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
That's Tim Kearns, who is our chief sports analyst, but he's also our political analyst. And, wow. All right. We'll take a break, come back with Josh's next guest on Trending Now, and we will have some advice for you on watching the eclipse coming up in a while.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill. At the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Our next guest is the incumbent Ward 2 City Councilor, Melissa Cox in Gloucester, who's running for Councilor at Large this year. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you've been on the council for a few years, and you're running at large now. Tell us about your experience on the city. Well, actually, let me stop here. We usually start out with, give us a 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we can get into some questions about the campaign.
Well, my name's Melissa Cox, and I've served on the city council for the Ward 2 area for 6 years now, and I am not from Gloucester, but I chose to live here, and I absolutely love it, and I love participating in our day-to-day aspects of the city.
Great. And you're involved in lots of things. You're part of the walk that they do in April, and a number of other. Your picture shows up everywhere, so you're involved in a number of activities around Gloucester. The Pride Stride is what I'm trying to think of. Tell us about some of the other things that you do besides wearing the hat of a city councilor.
Well, I have a full-time job, so I work for the town of Rockport and city councilor, of course, and president of Pride Stride. I joined probably 5 years ago and have been the president for the last 2 years, and I absolutely love it. I was just asked to be on the board of the First R, which is a group that does reading in our schools. So I'm excited to get geared up about that for this school year.
Great. Good. Now, what do you... You distinguish between a ward councilor, and this isn't written down anywhere, but the general sense is the ward councilors get all of the constituent kinds of issues that come up. If the catch basin needs to be cleaned out, if the street didn't get plowed well enough, that the trash didn't get picked, that the water pressure, those kind of issues. And councilors at large may not be as involved in that and may be involved in other things. Is that your take on it? And what does this change of running for at large do for you in terms of the kinds of things that you would engage as a counselor?
So, a little background on why I'm running at large. It wasn't a choice of, you know, moving from ward to at large. What originally happened was my cousin is a Commodore in the Navy, and she was originally supposed to take one last command of a ship, and she was going to be out for 2 years. So she asked my husband and I to take care of her daughter while she was doing this last command. Because it's fairly inconvenient to have a baby on board a battleship.
Yeah.
So we said yes, and with all things military, things changed, and so she actually took command of the Missile Defense Task Force out of Europe and now only has to be at sea for 6 weeks.
Ah.
So that's what happened. I announced early enough that I was not going to be running for Ward 2, that I was not going to be running at City Council at all because of my family commitment. And with her change, my change happened, and at the time, two people had already said that they were running for Ward 2, and out of respect and not wanting to disturb that balance, my next option was to run at large.
Well,
so
great.
That's what came about.
Well, and I think that's an important distinction to make, and good for you for taking the time to explain that to us. Social media is a phenomena that more and more elected officials are involved in, some on the end where you use it to help you get elected, but also we find to posting stuff to address the citizens, the citizenry or your constituency of Gloucester. I know that Kim Driscoll does it extensively in Salem. What's your take on that, and how valuable is it or has it been for you?
I think it's an extremely valuable tool, only because it's an immediate connection, and it allows people to go back and look at it if you need to. So if there's a snow ban and you forget what time it is, you know, having it posted by 9 city councilors and the administration and DPW and the police department, you know, it gives you different venues, and the friends that I'm friends with may not be friends with another councilor, you know, so it helps spread the word faster, and it gives you the ability to look back at things. I think it's great, but I think there's also that personal touch that people are used to getting as well. I still plan on going door to door to shake hands and introduce myself to people. I don't think social media should replace that kind of interaction at all during election time.
Great. Thank you. What do you see as the real issues in this coming election, whether you're running for mayor or city council? What are the things that folks are going to be talking about, do you think?
Well, I think the hot topic right now is definitely the retail marijuana. The last term, you know, we've dealt with the medical marijuana. And now with this new thing that's happening and the laws are changing every single day, if not every single hour, you know, we're still trying to figure out what the state's trying to figure out so we can communicate to our constituents. I think the next biggest topic is going to be Fuller. You know, I thought for sure that was going to be before us in this City Council, but looks like it's going to be in the next one.
The Fuller property.
Correct.
And what is? Can you give us an update? Where does that stand now? Other than the grass is 5 feet high, what if anything is happening there?
We don't know. That's just it. Is you know, we thought that we were going to get it about 2 or 3 months ago, and we got an update, and then it stalled out, and we were not quite sure. Why, or I'm not quite sure why. I hope that it's the fact that the group purchasing it went back to the drawing board regarding the affordable housing. But again, there's been very little communication.
Okay. City councils, as a rule, I mean, in a strong mayoral form of government, and this isn't just Gloucester, it's Salem, it's Beverly, the mayor and the city council acts somewhat as a counterbalance, a check and balance to the chief executive officer running a city as an elected official. And that creates some, it can create some inherent tension. What do you think of that, and how do you think this city council has worked with the current mayor, and what, if any, changes would you make on either side of that?
I'm not going to speak for other city councilors. I have the ability to work with the administration quite well. We agree to disagree. We do it respectfully. We do it to each other's face. We don't do it behind each other's back. We don't do it through TV or newspapers. You know, it's the directness and the bluntness that her and I have come to work on that allows us to have a good working relationship and still be able to agree and still be able to get things done.
That's great because, you know, there's a lot of, Tip O'Neill was Speaker of the House and he wrote the book, A Man of the House. He talks about that, that when he came up through the House of Representatives in Washington, you could agree to disagree. And even though you could rip each other apart on the floor in a debate, you were still going to be playing cards and drinking with those people on Thursday night at the poker game. And everybody still got along. And you've seen ebbs and flows of that where that's not the case, both at the, you know, at the city, at the state, and the national level. So it's good that you have that relationship and rapport with the mayor.
I mean, it's extremely helpful in order to move things along. This isn't a contest between myself and the administration. It's how we can better communicate to help the citizens of Gloucester. And I can honestly say that I don't think every city councilor has that ability. And, you know, it's frustrating as a part of a body that some are deliberately trying to prevent things from moving forward in a constructive manner.
This our U.S. Constitution was built on the premise of compromise. Democracy, and Socrates wrote, democracy at its best comes from a contrast of opinions. Not everybody's going to view the world the way you do or the way the mayor does, the way other city councils do. So everybody has to change, you know, a little bit or modify their position in order to, you know, do something for the common good. We had a few minutes left here, but what is the city's website is a great instrument to communicate to the public at large, it both people external to Gloucester. How reliant do you think that the public is on that, and what are some of the challenges that folks face, be it updating the data there or making it more user-friendly, or et cetera?
You know, I've had several discussions with the IT department regarding this and what our capabilities are. I think over the last 2 years, we've moved forward a lot with agendas and posting of information in a timely manner. So I do give kudos to Val Gilman. She did some research and found out some better ways to post and quicker, and it's great. The bottom line is our website is a little older. I think we need basically a whole new platform. But when that comes up, you know, it's a budget item and it's a huge expense.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we definitely need to pull the trigger on that sooner than later, because people go to the web more for information than they go anywhere else nowadays.
Great.
That being said, I do think we have a very good website for what the purpose is. And, you know, if we could expand to more languages and less cumbersome search qualities, I know that when you go to find me and you want to email me, the email address is not written in there. It's a link to an email address.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work properly.
Yeah.
So most people end up then calling.
Okay. I understand. Well, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. We certainly wish you the very best of luck as you proceed forward with your election as a candidate at large.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Take care.
NSONewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players. Exclusive video interviews following the big games. Live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. Live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders. Mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Jeff Cohen, who is a candidate for city councilor at large in Salem, Mass. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much. It's an honor to be on your show, Josh.
Jeff, we usually start out with and ask folks, give us the 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we can get into some questions about the election.
I'll be less than 3 or 4 minutes. I've been in Salem less than 10 years, so I'm going to tell you a little bit what I've done since I've been here. I was the city's recycling and trash coordinator, and while I was doing that, I helped increase the recycling percentage and reduce the trash percentage. I also ran the Solarize program, which is a state program, and I administered that as a solar coach in Salem. After that, I created a 501c3 nonprofit with Salem Alliance for the Environment, which is a great pragmatic environmental group, where I advise people about solar statewide. I actually proposed a creative solar concept for the Bentley and Witchcraft Heights schools. It was part of a project when the coal plant was retired, and when that was retired, a block of money was negotiated to go to purchase solar panels. The concept that I proposed is resulting in almost $100,000 a year in revenue that will go directly to the schools, and a new roof on the Bentley School. I'm a member of Salem's Sustainability, Energy, and Resiliency Committee, which is a city committee, I'm on the Salem for All Ages Leadership Council, also part of the Citizens Overdose and Substance Abuse Prevention Coalition, and I am currently the chair of Salem's No Place for Hate Committee. One of the things I'm very proud of is I don't just show up, I get things done. I'm blessed to be married to Flora Tontat, who owns a business by herself as a single woman-owned business in Salem. I listen to people, I learn, and then I lead.
Great. So what is it that you that inspired you to run for city councilor in Salem this year?
Although I feel I do a lot within the city so far, I'll tell you what inspired me. Two things. People encouraging me to run, and I was a victim of a hate crime, a bad hate crime. I'm not a victim anymore, and today I'm chair of the No Place for Hate Committee. And what I've realized my whole life is that you can never give back as much as you give. And I want to give back to Salem, and the best way I can do that is, unlike many of the people I'm running against who are already in the city council, I believe that being a city councilor is not just showing up, but it's actually doing things. And doing things, whether it's, you know, fixing a pothole or a sidewalk or something much bigger, that will affect all the residents together. And I feel like I've proven that I can do that, and I think it's time. I think we need to continue to move the city forward, and I believe that it's time for me to do that.
What do you think are the biggest issues that people are going to be talking about in the election in Salem this year?
Believe it or not, Josh, you know, most people are concerned with what happens, you know, in their neighborhood. Whether it's, we need to fix our sidewalks, we need to pave streets, we need to replant trees. But for issues that affect the entire city, I believe there's four main things, and that's parking and traffic, housing, homeless, the homeless situation, which is growing, and a sanctuary city. And those are the four categories that I think are most important that seem to affect the most people. Most people are concerned about.
And if you were, when you look at the city's website, it's lots of data on there. How effective do you think the city's website is as a instrument to communicate to the citizenry? And what, if anything, would you want to see improved or modified in any way?
I actually think the city website, Salem.com, is pretty good. I used it a lot when I was working in the recycling and solar. And there are some really key points. You know, if you're a Salem resident, you can report any issue, no matter what it is, through a component, a link on the home page called C-Click Fix. And that goes immediately to the appropriate party, whether it's the police department for a light that's out or, you know, recycling because someone didn't pick up their trash, whatever. There's another thing the city has is Code Red. And Code Red means that the city communicates through text messages and other means, you know, emails about things that are going on, whether it's, emergency snow days or, you know, traffic being closed because of events. However, I do think that we can always get better, and one way we can get better is going beyond the website. You know, not everyone is online and has, you know, access to your radio show, for example. Yep. And, you know, many of these are seniors or other people, and we need to continue to be able to communicate to them. I also feel, truthfully, that our city clerk has not put enough information in Spanish. We have a pretty decent-sized Latino population about how to register to vote, voting issues, how to become registered and things like that. So there's things that we can do that could really enhance the site and also improve the way we communicate with people.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. We've been putting this question out there to folks from multiple cities that are running for office, and it's interesting the perspectives that come in about it. For example, posting the minutes of the different committees, boards, and commissions, there's some question, well, whose job is that? Is that the fall in the area of the city clerk? And does that mean the minutes need to be approved before you can post them? So there's some time lag just because, you know, something he meets every other month or every couple of weeks or whatever. And we've become a society that's more and more expecting information instantly. So, you know, there are those issues. And at the point you make that is one I've made here in Gloucester is that how come things aren't in more languages? So, but those are, you know, if you're does that mean – the more the technology changes, the more there are cost considerations. Do we hire a translator? Do we contract out for that? How many languages do we do? So I mean, there are any number of issues, and I'm glad that that you are looking at you've offered that perspective. Social media is an important thing in elections today, not only simply from the vantage point of getting elected, but communicating with the constituency on an ongoing basis. Tell us about your thoughts on how it, how you either deploy it or plan to deploy it as a candidate for office, and then how you think you'd use it if you're elected.
Well, I can always do better. I think this is part of the process of learning from others. My wife, for example, before she started her bed and breakfast, was a software engineer. And she's very adept at it. I'm pretty versed in Facebook, for example, and I'll give you an example of what we do. The No Place I Hate Committee is a mayor's committee, so it's a city organization, and the Renewable Energy Task Force is a city organization. And yet we have, which I'm one of the administrators, we have Facebook pages. When we have meetings, we create events. One of the things about social media is it's a great way not only to educate people, but to make people aware of things, to invite people, to create a buzz. And there's, you know, there's lots of different, you know, manifestations of that, you know, Twitter and other things. So I personally, feel like it's, you know, as far as my campaign goes, I try to educate people through my Facebook page and let them know what I'm doing or what I believe in. But I also think that I don't want to lose track of, as a candidate and as a human being, of the value of face-to-face interaction. You know, just like Gloucester, we're not a huge city, and people really care about that one-to-one looking someone in the eye. So I believe that you got to work on both of those, and I know I can get better. But I'm pretty grateful that I have a lot of Facebook followers, and for example, No Place for Hate, we have over 1,500 likes on our Facebook page, and it's a great way for us to do all the things that I mentioned before.
Well, you know, I've mentioned on the show before that, you know, I don't know if there's a if it's a declared issue here or not, but Kim Driscoll, the mayor of Salem, and Safathia Romeo Taken, the mayor of Gloucester, use social media extensively, and it almost, if you watch it, if Kim posts something within 15 minutes, Safathia is going to post something, and it just works out that way.
No, it's great, and I share that. I work a lot with the mayor, and I feel like there's a lot of value. It's all about what we first started talking about. It's all about getting to people, whether it's how you communicate on the city webpage or through other, you know, Facebook, Twitter, whatever. It's really about making sure that everyone is aware of what needs to be made aware of, and in some ways, like in my campaign, hopefully to get people excited about what I stand for.
Great, great. We got just a couple minutes more left, and I just wanted to ask you, the cities that have an elected mayor as the chief executive officer for the city usually have a city council that is a check and balance to them. So that creates some inherent friction at times. Do you think that friction is good? And how important is it for the city council and mayor to get along and to work through issues, or to, in some cases, be at odds?
Let me give you my perspective. I don't believe that there's a necessary friction that has to happen. What I believe that's necessary is communication. Okay, and to be able to work together, we can all find common ground on something. I mean, I'm running for city council because I personally believe that our at-large representation is not representative of our city, and I believe that the check and balance is that the mayor governs the city, has to deal with, you know, balancing a budget and everything else. And as a city council, I'm a legislator. You know, deal with constituent services, of course, but I'm a legislature. And, you know, and I can, number one, represent the constituents, but also represent a particular view. For example, you know, I wrote the original Sanctuary City Ordinance. I'm very proud of that. I believe it's important, and it's important to educate people. I also have a platform on housing, you know, where I believe that if you work in Salem, you should be able to live in Salem. So whether the mayor and I agree on every issue or not is not important. What's important is that what's in front of us, that we're able to communicate and find common ground and move that to the next level and make sure we're always legislating properly.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Certainly wish you the very best of luck in your campaign and hope you have a good weekend.
Well, thank you. It really means a lot to me that you invited me on the show. And good luck to you with your future interviews and what you do. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Okay.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We'll treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill. At the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
One. Okay, we're back now with Trending Now, and joining us is the Assistant Director of the Gloucester Health Department, Max Schenck. And Max, how are you today?
I'm doing great, Rick. How about yourself?
Very well, thank you. Very well. Now, you know, I'm an amateur astronomer, and I know a little bit about astronomy and telescopes and that kind of stuff. But I got to tell you, I really don't know anything about how to observe a solar eclipse, which is the reason I gave you a call. Other than the warning never to look directly at the sunlight. So how are you looking at this thing? What should we be looking at?
Well, from the public health perspective, I mean, obviously, make sure that people's eyes are thoroughly protected while viewing what should be a wonderful natural spectacle. So, but one of the things I think people need to be very aware of is that in our area, it's not going to be a total eclipse. So there are websites and such that tell you that once the sun is in totality, or once the eclipse is in totality, you can take your filters away from your eyes and have a quick look. But around here, that's not going to happen. So there at no point during this eclipse should you be taking any eye protection off. And there's certain eye protection that you should be wearing. You know, the best advice we could probably give you is to search out the American Astronomical Society's website, who has a list of reputable vendors for solar filters and viewers on a web page there. So, but bare minimum, they should be and state that they are compliant with ISO 12312-2, which sounds very official, the international safety and standard for such products. Having said all of that, you know, you do risk a great amount of damage to your eyes by looking directly into the sun because, and you may not even know it because essentially the retinas don't have pain indicators in them, so or pain sensors. So you wouldn't know what was happening. The discomfort that you sometimes feel if you accidentally look at the sun is actually the muscles around the iris restricting in order to get the pupils to shrink. So if you spend any amount of time looking at the sun, you can definitely do some damage. So, you know, and that's pretty much the short story on it. But I'm happy to answer whatever questions you may have.
Well, I'm going to link to the ASA for sure up on the website and you know, go directly to what they advise. But I know that, you know, when you mention not feeling pain,
There have been one or two times in my life when I've accidentally had sunlight directly in my eye, usually from a reflection of a mirror or the car. But every now and then I've actually glanced at the sun. And it's really scary when you get that direct thing because, first of all, you have, I think it's sort of like a white blindness or spots in your eyes. But then it did come back, thank goodness. But it's very dangerous even to look, you know, 70-80% totality. We should not be looking directly at that at the sun. Is that correct?
That's correct. Not without some sort of approved filtration. And that includes, you know, even if you have something to be very aware of, even if you have those filter glasses on, you can't or shouldn't be using telescopes unless they're properly filtered. You shouldn't be using cameras unless they're properly filtered as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, binoculars unless they're properly filtered as well, because, you know, as you would think, they're actually magnifying that light. So the standalone filters are fine, but if you start intensifying the amount of light hitting them, then they're not going to be sufficient enough.
Well, I know
even looking at the moon, at the full moon, you've got to have a filter on a telescope at night because it will hurt your eyes. And tell me, Max, what is the damage that is caused? Because from what I understand, you get damage from direct sunlight, even if it's a short exposure. That's not really repairable.
Exactly. You can get something that's actually called eclipse blindness, and what it does is it burns the retinas in your eyes. Essentially, the radiation coming down, if you stare into it long enough, is cooking your eyes to a certain extent.
Mm.
We've all had that experience of, you know, you side glance or you look at the setting sun or something in those lines, and then you close your eyes and you'll see it for quite a long time.
Right.
Afterwards. That in and of itself, causes a tiny bit of damage, but it's repairable over time. But if you spend a significant amount of time looking at it in concentration, then you're going to run into some major physical issues.
Okay, and I know you can see it with your averted vision, just don't look at it. And the other thing, of course, is to, you know, do the old pinhole in a cardboard thing and project it onto a paper. But, Max, is there anything else you'd like to warn us about, either UV or the solar viewing or anything else?
Well, I know that Kelly Reese, our public health nurse, and Karen Carroll, the health director, had a good conversation with you about our UV protection on beaches and such, and making sure that you're covered that way. But in terms of the eclipse itself, no, that pretty much covers it. I mean, people should go out and enjoy the moment, but just do it safely and make sure you have proper protection.
All right, I appreciate it, and we will take that advice. That is Max Schenck, who is the assistant director of the Gloucester Health Department. We'll be right back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plastow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
All right, we're running a little late because we started a little late. I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. This is Trending Now. And, Josh, I know that you've been interviewing candidates for city elections and municipal elections coming up. And interestingly, no one's talking about what went on this week, but I know that I talked with several people. We were on some of our sales rounds with some of our clients and people we know in the area. And it's really weird in that no one wants to talk about it.
Yeah.
Really, really scary to me. And I finally, when I saw that that meme last night on Iwo Jima with the Iwo Jima Memorial, the United States Marine Memorial down at Arlington National Cemetery, I said, okay, that's it. I've got to say something. This is absurd. But that being said, what are you doing now with this? I know that you're sort of feeling clients out and so on, and we're getting these terrific interviews on Trending Now. But you yourself have some kind of a consultant program?
Yeah, a colleague of mine and friend from Rotary, Dave Gardner, and I have started a company. It's a political consulting company, but it's looking at elections in a different way, and that is he has a printing company by trade, but most of the business that people do with printers is people happen to come in and say, can you print me these signs or bumper stickers or whatever? And there isn't really, from what we've seen, an aggressive sales attempt to sell products, both existing products and created products. So, for example, with data mining and research, you can go in and sort who the contributors are in a different city by city by zip code, and look at that and provide, and that's valuable data to a candidate. But it's also, so if you're in Salem and you want to run for city council, you want to run for mayor, it's you want to have a good money list. Who are the people who have historically contributed to city or state elections? Or candidates running in those areas. We can do a letter with a solicitation asking you to support a particular candidate, cheaper than most candidates can do it on their own. And there's lots of other kinds of data that's available that you know, is a new product for some, and it's letting people know that that's out there. But there's a range of other services and products that we provide.
So how do people get to you if they're running for office and want to avail themselves of your expertise?
Well, they can write to Josh Arnold at josharnold@verizon.net. We also have a Facebook page that they just put Arnold and Gardner's and Associates. They'll find. We're looking to it seems that every elected official and person running for office wants to have a social media presence, but they don't all have a game plan on how to go about it, or how to maximize it, or how to use it to get their vote out. We're offering a service to help them do that.
Well, I think somewhere down the future, we're going to have a special program on social media. I will be teaching a course in the fall with teachers about social media, fake news, and credible sources. Through Endicott College, but it's once again, and this has nothing to do with what you just said, but technology has gotten so far ahead of ethics that someone like Trump can use it in such an insidious way that it's pretty freaky, and it's very, very effective. Trump, of all things that he is also a master of the tweet. There's no doubt about it. If people want to learn how to maximize marketing skills through Twitter, they've got to study his tweets because they're absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and the other thing that's interesting is that we're missing something if we rely on tweets, because tweets are like sound bites. They're written sound bites, but there's so much more mm-hmm. to an issue in a story mm-hmm. than that. And it's a way of communicating, but it's not the be all and end all. And you know, if you're looking to communicate a message, tweeting is only a piece of the equation. There are lots of other things that are out there that you need to be doing to communicate your message.
Indeed. Okay, so what do we have lined up in the future?
We have several people who I don't have them written down, but several people I'm talking to that are outside of the political world. Mm-hmm. That are going to be talking with us, some from nonprofits, the arts, and a woman's going to be talking about dementia and some other things.
I'll listen, but I'll probably forget what I hear, so that's good.
And I couldn't remember her name either.
That's right.
I was waiting for you to say, and you can't remember the
no,
name.
No, yeah,
person.
I can't.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's cool. All right, special thanks today to the Assistant Director of the Gloucester Public Health System, Max Schenck, for helping us out with this eye thing. And I want to remind everybody, please be extremely careful on Monday. It's supposed to be a nice, clear day, so be extremely careful if you're doing some solar viewing. Do not look directly at the sun unless you have bona fide, certified, proper eyewear. All right, so for Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, our the voice of the North Shore, Bill Newell, I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye.